Welcome back to Through the Word in Daniel 11. We're spending extra time on the details here because Daniel 11 is all about detail. It is prophecy with precision. In the first 20 verses, we saw the kings and wars of the Persian and Greek empires, following the divided Greek empire king by king, and focusing on north and south, the Seleucid and Ptolemaic kingdoms. Still no flying dinosaurs. Remember, those two kingdoms border Israel, north and south, and their wars would run back and forth across Israel's borders. These prophecies were given to Israel to assure them that their God remained in control, that he saw it all coming. And boy, will they need that reminder in the next story. We left off at verse 21. In 175 BC, 361 years into Daniel's future, after the untimely death of Seleucus IV, also prophesied, verse 21 opens, "He will be succeeded by a contemptible person who has not been given the honor of royalty." The king worthy of contempt is Antiochus IV, Epiphanes. The next 15 verses focus on this one king, and just as the prophecy states, Epiphanes was not born to royalty, but he seized the kingdom through intrigue, flattery, and manipulation. Now, why so much focus on one king? Antiochus Epiphanes is a type or foreshadowing of Antichrist. Epiphanes means manifest one, but the Jews called him Epimanes, the madman. In fact, as we read on, his past story will blend directly into the future story of the Antichrist in the end times. You'll see as we go. Now keep in mind, the text in Daniel keeps saying King of the South and King of the North, but I'm filling in the names from what we now know in history. Verses 22 to 25 tell of battles between Antiochus Epiphanes up north and Ptolemy VI down south, with much detail. Verse 26 predicts the deception of Ptolemy by his own advisors. He was captured, and his brother, Ptolemy VIII, ruled back home in Egypt. Meanwhile, Ptolemy VI and Epiphanes are in verse 27. The two kings, with their hearts bent on evil, will sit at the same table and lie to each other. And that's exactly what happened. Two kings sat down to discuss an alliance to defeat the brother down in Egypt, but neither intended to keep the treaty. Back in 27, but to no avail, because an end will still come at the appointed time. Now there's a telling verse for all of this. An end will still come. God knows the end from the beginning, and it will happen at God's appointed time. The end of each king, each leader, each nation. Verse 28 tells us that Epiphanes will return to his own country with great wealth, but his heart will be set against the Holy Covenant. Remember, Israel was along the road home, and something just set this wicked man's heart against the people of God's covenant. 29 tells us that he will invade Egypt again, but this time ends differently. Ships of the western coastlands will oppose him. Those western ships are Romans, and in 168 BC, Rome joined Egypt and defeated Epiphanes at Alexandria. The Roman military machine was on the rise, and Epiphanes was humiliated. He would pay tribute to Rome from then on. Verse 30 tells us, "Then he will turn back and vent his fury against the Holy Covenant." Caught in the middle again, Israel was an easy target for a humiliated king. He will return and show favor to those who forsake the Holy Covenant. Well, here's what happened. Epiphanes sent a tax collector named Apollonius to Jerusalem. He claimed peace at first, but on the Sabbath day began to kill and plunder, and he rewarded Jews who forsook the covenant and supported the king. The story is recorded in Maccabees, and it's also the Hanukkah story. It's 167 BC, 369 years future, and in verse 31, his armed forces will rise up to desecrate the temple fortress and will abolish the daily sacrifice. Then they will set up the abomination that causes desolation. Remember that phrase. Jesus quotes it. the abomination that causes desolation. Abomination means filthy, disgusting. It's usually used to describe idolatry, because idolatry is like adultery, cheating on God. The way a good person would describe their spouse cheating is how God describes idolatry. And here's what happened. When Epiphanes' armies attacked in full, they occupied Jerusalem and stopped the daily temple sacrifices and set up an altar to Zeus there in the temple. Epiphanes sacrificed a pig, unclean, on the Lord's altar and desecrated the temple with pig blood. And it caused desolation. The Jews, the priests, could not enter the temple. Unclean pig's blood everywhere. The Lord's temple, desolate. Verse 32, with flattery he will corrupt those who have violated the covenant. Epiphanes was one who corrupted people, always deceiving, and some Jews joined him. But the people who know their God will firmly resist him. I love that phrase. The people who know their God. The gutsiest people in the world are the ones who know their God, whose God is the Lord. Well, to know God, to fear God, is to hate evil. And the heroes prophesied here are among the most famous of Jewish heroes to this day, the Maccabees of the Hanukkah story. I won't tell their whole story here, but it's certainly worth your reading. In verse 33, those who are wise will instruct many. This is the first of four mentions of those who are wise. In a time when evil rules the day, the wise are desperately needed. And the wise will instruct many. That's what wise people do. They share wisdom. When days are dark, we need the wise to teach. But the verse goes on. Though for a time they will fall by the sword, or be burned, or captured, or plundered. Hold on. I liked the part where the wise were teaching. What happened? Keep reading. When they fall, they will receive a little help, and many who are not sincere will join them. Great. First they're falling, now they get insincere help. Fakes and hypocrites, help them out. Thanks a lot. But understand, this happens. This did happen. To live wise in dark times is a tricky road. Watch verse 35. Some of the wise will stumble, so that they may be refined, purified, and made spotless until the time of the end. Now there we get some explanation. The wise, the ones who know their God, stumble and struggle. They endure trials so that they will be refined. That's what fire does to gold. It refines it. And anyone who wants to be wise, wise enough to instruct many, must endure trials. Because it is the fire of trials that refines our wisdom. And it helps all of us distinguish between the truly wise and the insincere who jump on the platform with them. The wise want many to be instructed. The hypocrites just want an audience. And it says that the refining will go on until the time of the end. Stop there. That phrase is key. Key because it puts everything in perspective. All the trials will end. But also key because it marks a transition right here. Verses 1 to 35 were all fulfilled perfectly, from 536 to 167 BC. Verses 36 to the end were not. Seriously, the rest of the chapter doesn't match up with the history books. Epiphanes' story didn't end the way chapter 11 ends. So, the skeptics say, this was all written at just that time. In 167, someone wrote the history as if it was prophecy, and then they made up the rest. But it didn't happen. Now you already know that's not what I believe. So how do the rest of us read this? Well, first of all, remember there is lots of evidence that this was in fact written back in 536, including the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Septuagint, the language, and more. So what happens here? Why does it go wrong? We believe that it jumps forward. Understand that prophecy often works like mountain peaks. When you look at them from afar, they look like they're close together. But when you climb to the top of one, the one right behind it is actually way off in the distance, with a huge valley between that you hadn't seen. Verse 35 represents the closer peak, and there's a huge valley of time between 35 and 36. Verse 36 jumps to the distant future, to the end times. Now look at the text. That's why it says, until the time of the end, for it will still come at the appointed time. That's a clue. This happens all over Scripture. Prophecies jump in time, but you don't see it until after. So verses 1 to 35 were fulfilled, but 36 to 45 match up with other end times prophecies, including Revelation. And remember that Jesus refers to the abomination that causes desolation as an end times event, still to come, because Antiochus Epiphanes was only a type, a foreshadowing of the Antichrist to come. And that leads us to a big question. Does all this precise and accurate prophecy still speak to our future, now, 2,500 years later? And for that answer, I'll meet you back here for the end of chapter 11.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.